Recorded live.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here, and along with Pastor William Fink. And this is another installment of the, what show are we doing tonight? Christogenos. Okay. I've been under a lot of strain lately, folks. So, and working a lot, which is actually good because I got bills to pay. So, we're on the, which episode are we on now in Ezekiel? Probably 10 or 11. You know, we're doing a thorough treatment of the book of Ezekiel. And I believe, Bill, we left off in chapter 22.
Yes, we should be on chapter 22, verse 14.
Verse 14. But before we actually get into that, I want to make an announcement, and this is very good news, folks. Both Bill's website, Christogenia.org, right?
Yes.
And my website, Anglo-SaxonIsrael.com, we've both broken the 1 million, how do you put this, we're more popular than 1 million.
well, we're in the top million websites in the world.
Top million
both
websites.
Both sites, the traffic's picking up on both sites.
Something like 800.
Christogenia has had 1,100 visitors the last 3 days.
Uh-huh. Fantastic.
And in fact, I posted, you know, I have to put more of our programs on the front page of my site.
Uh-huh.
Because the ones in the archives might get 30, 40, 50 downloads. Some of them, like the 2C line archives, get a couple of hundred.
Uh-huh.
But when I put a podcast on a front page, it gets 1,000 downloads,
right.
1,500 downloads.
Uh-huh.
It's crazy. It's the disparity is nuts.
Right. Well, we learned from the Jews. It's called advertising.
Well, right. It's only one click to the podcast, right?
Right.
I mean, by category on my site. You could get any category. Just read the menus. I don't think a lot of people do that. I think a lot of people just read down the front page.
Right.
And last week, because the Saturday night program didn't post on TalkShoe for almost 24 hours before I could download it and put it on my site, I thought, what the hell, I'll put it on the front page. I usually only put, like, special one-topic programs on the front page.
Right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You know, so that I don't have a whole lot of clutter with long-running series.
Yes.
But I'm going to start putting them all on the front page because I put this 1 Peter chapters 1 to 2 on the front page that we did last week, and it got 549 downloads in 5 days.
All right, very good.
And that's incredible.
Yeah.
Now, the compared to what it would have done if I put it in, comparatively, I'll go look at the Paul series on Timothy,
mm-hmm.
and that got 12 downloads, 16 downloads, 28 downloads.
Right.
But they have to click on a menu item to find it, right?
Sure.
If it's on the front page, I guess they'll get 500-600 downloads in a week.
Yeah,
and
when we talked about this during the week, you mentioned that the highest-rated shows we've ever done are the ones on Hebrew.
The highest-rated show we've ever done, some of the most popular ones that we've done on language, Greek culture is Hebrew, 1,477 downloads.
Uh-huh.
The biggest one is that Galatians 3 program we did. Galatians 3 Revisited when
uh-huh.
we went back and discussed this. And I put that on the front page because I thought that program stood by itself pretty well.
Right.
And that got over 1,600 downloads.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. And that's really important, too, because the book of Galatians was horribly, horribly, horribly translated by the King James translators. They mistranslated anointed as Christ, you know, when it really means as Jesus Christ, when it means the anointed people of Israel, okay? And in many cases, they retrofitted sentences so that they switched the subject and object, and then they used turned verbs into adjectives and nouns into verbs, and they've done all kinds of crazy stuff trying to universalize the text.
Well, my program tomorrow night is going to be titled Errors Inspired by Who?
Yeah.
And it's going to be all about mistranslations in the King James Bible,
uh-huh.
starting with Paul, of course.
Okay, yeah.
Who's my favorite just because that's where the most mistranslations are.
Right.
And I'm going to try to focus on the blatant errors in translation, not the petty arguments and matters of interpretation, but the plain errors in translation. I'm going to try to focus on them. And tomorrow night, I have 13 pages of notes already, and I'm not through Paul, so for tomorrow night's program.
Right, right, yeah. And probably one of the biggest ones would be Born Again, which...
Well, right, but that I'll have to say for John because the words aren't found in Paul, right?
Oh, they aren't. Oh, that's right. Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, okay, very good, very good. Okay, so that's great news, folks. We've broken the 1 million mark. We're in the top 1 million and something like 825,000. And so we're moving up all the time. Pretty soon we're going to be challenging Wikipedia, right?
Well, I don't know about that.
But maybe not Britney Spears. Okay. All right, so we left off at Ezekiel 22:14. And so far, all of these first 21 chapters have been nothing but fire and brimstone. Ezekiel is chewing out the flock, and he's chewing out the Israelites, telling us how evil we are because we fail to obey Yahweh's laws and are engaging in all kinds of idolatrous and heathen religion, okay, and all kinds of fornication, race mixing, you name it. Our ancestors were doing it in the time of Ezekiel. And he spares no abuse of the Israelites of his day, okay? So let's continue, chapter 22, verse 15. And I will scatter you among the heathen and disperse you in the countries, and I will consume your filthiness out of you.
And I would think that that's, that I will scatter you among the nations, the other Genesis 10 nations.
Okay.
And disperse thee in countries.
Mm-hmm. Well, obviously, when the Israelites were dispersed into Europe, there were no nations there. Okay?
Well, right, but they were scattered among the nations, meaning the...
All right, Romans,
and we're going to see
the Greek.
The Medes, the Assyrians,
okay.
There were already Israelites in Rome.
Right.
And in Europe, in Illyria, those people also descended from the Trojans.
Yes.
That's often overlooked by identity.
Where's Illyria?
Well, Illyria is on what we would consider, it's what we would call now the Aegean Sea. It's the the Adriatic Sea in between Italy and Greece.
Okay.
North of Greece.
Okay.
It's Illyria is on the Adriatic Sea.
So it would be
north
what?
Of Greece. It's modern day Albania.
Yeah. Okay.
And Yugoslavia or in that area is
right.
Ancient Illyria, and that was a large settlement of mixed Macedonians and Dardans and people even Procopius states that the Emperor Justinian descended from the Dardans in Illyria.
Uh-huh.
Meaning that he's of the house of Zarachuda.
Uh-huh. Right. Darda. Yes.
And
very good.
Those people were a dispersion of the Trojans that didn't go to Rome. Not all of the Trojans went to Rome, right?
Uh-huh. Okay.
And that's pretty clear in history.
Well, some of them went to Britain. So.
Well, from Rome, yes,
mm-hmm.
Early on, according to the ancient poets, yes,
right.
Especially Virgil, that
yeah.
the Romans were a dispersion of Israelites. Many of the Greek tribes, the Danans and the Dorians, were dispersions of the Israelites. But these Israelites spoken of here, that the Assyrians, and the Judeans that were taken off to Babylon, they mostly settled around Babylon, but generally speaking, it's talking about, I will scatter thee among the nations,
mm-hmm.
the deportations of the Israelites to the cities of the Medes, the Persians, the Assyrians.
Right.
In Tobit, we find Tobit in Nineveh,
yeah.
The capital city of Assyria.
Right.
There were Israelites. They didn't all stay in two or three little groups. They were really widely dispersed.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And that's evident with the later histories of the Sakka, and that's who the Israelites are, and that's from where the Scythians
right.
came, and this is all well recorded and well elucidated upon studying the classics and archaeology.
Right.
The deportations in Israel's gathering in Europe, Amos, who was pretty much a contemporary with Isaiah and Hosea, wrote clearly regarding this, and I'd like to quote it.
Okay.
In regard to verse 15 here, Amos 9:9-10, for lo, I will command, and I will sift the house of Israel among all nations,
mm-hmm.
meaning the nations of the Adamic world, right?
There were only those nations really in existence, and that those are the only nations that the...
Well, right, they're the only nations within the scope of the Bible, that's for sure.
They didn't go to China.
Right. Like as, well, some of them ultimately
actually,
did, that's
did.
Another story, right?
Did. The Japhethites did, but not
that, like as corn is sifted in a sieve, yet shall not the least grain fall upon the earth. In
mm-hmm.
other words, the Israelites being dispersed amongst those nations will not be destroyed.
Yes.
The Jews like to make us think they disappeared, right?
Right.
That this says not the least grain shall fall upon the earth.
Mm-hmm.
All the sinners of my people, the sinners, shall die by the sword,
yes.
which say the evil shall not overtake nor
mm-hmm.
prevent
mm-hmm.
us.
Mm-hmm.
And that describes the self-righteous sinners of today perfectly,
yeah.
that final clause. It's the general attitude of sinners, and it reflects,
yeah.
you know, the homosexual self-righteousness we see in society
exactly.
today. The people that sin consistently
and
think that they're not going to be punished for it.
Yes.
And it's very self-destructive.
That's right.
And now, when something is placed into a sieve, right, it comes out the other side, does it not?
Yes.
And it usually comes out as fine matter, right?
Sure.
So if Israel is entered into a sieve, so to speak, as Amos 9, 9, and 10 state,
right.
then that sieve must be those nations, Assyria, Media, northern Syria, Persia, the places to which Israel was taken captive.
Right.
And then, indeed, Israel must be those Cimmerians and Scythians which appeared emerging from those same regions
right.
not 100 years later.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and I believe it's 2 Maccabees, the Israelites make a statement that we will escape from our captivity here among the Assyrians.
Well, that's actually 2 Esdras.
2 Esdras, okay. And they say that we will, from now on, we will practice the law which we did not practice when we were in Palestine, okay? That's the vow they made before entering into Europe, okay? So,
and that's also what the prophet said.
Uh-huh.
That's what the prophet said,
right.
That they were going to be deported. They were going to be scattered in these nations. They were going to be regathered.
Hmm.
That regathering can only have happened. Well, we see in all the classics that the Scythians originated in Mesopotamia. The Saka originated amongst the cities of the Assyrians, the Medes, the
mm-hmm.
Persians.
Right.
They're in all the ancient inscriptions that will support
right.
this. When they're looked at,
yeah.
and with the body of classical literature.
Mm-hmm.
Now that regathering could only have taken place when these Saka, Scythians, Cimmerians, their names for all the same people,
mm-hmm.
Galatahi, Galatians, their names for all the same people. When these people were gathered that and migrated up into Eastern Asia and into Europe.
Yes. Yes. Okay.
And that regathering had to happen in Europe. And even many of the Scythians who carried in Asia for a long time in one form or another came into Europe later.
Right. Well, they were driven west by the various Asian hordes, you know, throughout history. You know,
right. But I think those Asian hordes actually probably descended from them in part.
Well, they mixed. You know.
Well, the Avars and the Huns and
mm-hmm.
not all of the Huns were
right.
mixed. Some of them obviously
right.
were,
yes.
and it can be established in archaeology
right.
that some of them were. But I believe that the Avars, the Huns, the Bulgars,
right.
the Mongols are all basically Japhethite tribes or Scythian tribes, or Israel
right.
tribes, who mixed in the east and drove west later.
Right, right. Yeah, and I think it was Attila or Attila. Attila the Hun was reported to have red hair.
Well, you know that there's Jordan is the historian of the Goths, right? And
yeah.
and he lived in the 7th century and he was a Goth who was vehemently anti-Hun.
Right.
And the Romans were vehemently anti-Hun.
Sure.
However, you know, Procopius, the Byzantine historian, he describes the Huns. Yet, you know, it's Jordanes that describes Attila, and people, scholars think he's generally copying from an earlier Roman historian. I believe his name was Cassiodorus.
Okay.
I haven't had the opportunity to read him yet.
Yeah.
But Cassiodorus describes Attila the Hun as a short, runty, yellow, pointy-eared look, something that looked like Yoda from Star Wars, right? Jordanes repeats that, Okay. And Jordanez, if we read his work, I think the guy was fairly honest, but he was a propagandist in favor of the Goths.
Right.
And he would have had every reason to want to slander the Huns.
Sure.
There's another body of literature that there's the Nibelungenlied, which is a Germanic poem which parts of date to the 5th century A.D., and that spoke very highly of Attila. They were civilized, that they were noble, and it describes them in such a manner. But Procopius, the Byzantine historian of Justinian's court, I believe he was an honest man, and he was in firsthand contact with Huns that fought for the great General Belisarius, and he describes the Huns as noble, excellent horsemen, tall, white, and fair.
Okay, yeah. So we have to, even in the ancient days, there was all kinds of propaganda, so we have to be able to read through it. Yes, very good. All right, verse 16, and you shall take your inheritance in yourself in the sight of the heathen, and you shall know that I am Yahweh. In other words, as we just discussed from that verse in Second Esdras, that they would take their lawful attitude with them.
Right. And that's what it seems like it's saying. But let me discuss this verse because there's some division over it, right?
Okay.
Now you just read the King James Version.
That's right.
I'm going to read the Septuagint. And I will give heritages in the sight of the nations, and ye shall know that I am Yahweh. Now that's basically very contextual with verses 14 and 15. I have no problem with it. He's going to sift them through the nations, and then he's going to give them an inheritance.
Yes.
Now that seems to actually coincide with Scripture at Deuteronomy 32:8. When Yahweh divided the land among the sons of Adam, he left the bounds of the people according to the number of the children of Israel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we have the NAS here and the Young's Literal Translation, and they seem to go with the Hebrew a lot better than the King James.
Okay.
And it's very different. It says, and you will profane yourself in the sight of the nations.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Hebrew that I have from Bible Works, that's the only copy of a Hebrew text I have, is in that Bible Word software program. And that clearly supports what the NAS says.
Okay.
And so does the Young's Literal Translation, that they will be polluted in thyself before the eyes of the nations. Now, that's very different from the way the King James reads.
Okay.
But it doesn't explain the Septuagint.
Right.
Yeah, and I will give heritages in the sight of the nations. The King James disagrees with the Hebrew here, and agrees with the Septuagint.
Right.
And I don't know, to me the only explanation of that is that the King James translators may have had a different Hebrew text.
Could be, yeah. Well, they had the Masoretic text.
Well, I understand that. And and the NAS is also from the Masoretic text.
Mm-hmm.
And this Bible Works program that agrees with it claims to be from the Masoretic text.
Okay.
So, did they have a different Masoretic text?
Right.
Or did they not like that verse and take it from the Septuagint?
Right.
That's really strange there. And I didn't have time to check Jerome's Vulgate, but I did try to check the Dead Sea Scrolls to clear up this problem. And this verse is not attested to in the Dead Sea Scrolls.
Well, a multiplicity of heritages would certainly fit the various tribes and the various nations, because what we have is the 12 tribes brought with themselves the heraldry of the 12 tribes.
Well, right. I lean towards accepting the Septuagint translation here as the authoritative one.
Right. Okay, very good. Verse 17, and the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Son of man, the house of Israel is to me become dross. All they are brass and tin and iron and lead in the midst of the furnace. They are even the dross of silver.
Okay. Now, the dross is the layer of scum at the top of a crucible of molten metal, which forms from the impurities that the metal contains.
Right. We are being refined. Yahweh is refining us, and there's a lot of heat being applied to us. Verse 19, therefore, thus says Yahweh, because you are all become dross, behold, therefore, I will gather you into the midst of Jerusalem. Okay, now, of course, this can't be taken literally. It has to be the prophetic Jerusalem here.
And we've seen that in earlier in Ezekiel and in Isaiah.
Yes.
That the people are Jerusalem.
Right.
Wherever the people are, the main body of our people, that's Jerusalem.
That's Jerusalem. And that's also Zion. The Zion is the leadership. Verse 20.
It's also the mountain of Yahweh.
That's right. Verse 20, as they gather silver and brass and iron and lead and tin into the midst of the furnace to blow the fire upon it, to melt it, so will I gather you in my anger and my fury, and I will leave you there and melt you. And, of course, he is still applying the heat to us today, except the average Christian doesn't understand it. They think they're already saved. No, you're not. The heat is going to be applied to you whether you like it or not. Verse 21.
Well, that's the trial by fire we were talking about the other night in 1 Peter.
That's right. Verse 21. Yea, I will gather you and blow upon you in the fire of my wrath, and you shall be melted in the midst thereof. As silver is melted in the midst of the furnace, so shall you be melted in the midst thereof, and you shall know that I, Yahweh, have poured out my fury upon you. And the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Son of man, say to her, you are the land that is not cleansed nor rained upon in the day of indignation. Okay, so is this like a last days, or are we talking about the various indignations that Yahweh has, you know, he's, I don't know, virtually every chapter is talking about his indignation and how he is sifting and purging and trying us with fire, okay? So it can be more than one instance here we're talking about.
Well, absolutely. As we saw in Isaiah, all these end time prophecies prophesize the end time and the new age in Christ, while at the same time they're prophesying the end of the old kingdom.
Right, right. Very good. Verse 25, there is a conspiracy of her prophets in the midst thereof.
Now, can you say John Hagee, Joel Osteen?
Right.
How about Schofield and Bullinger and
that's
Benny
right.
Hinn and the rest of those clowns?
Right, and even who was the famous one in the 50s and 60s?
Billy Graham.
Billy Graham.
Every one of them.
Right.
They've had a conspiracy.
That's
they
right.
Followed the Jews. They've been following the Jews since Schofield and Bullinger.
Yeah. Well, these are the wolves in sheep's clothing of the book of Matthew. There is a conspiracy of her prophets in the midst thereof, like a roaring lion, ravening the prey. They have devoured souls. They have taken the treasure and precious things. They have made her many widows in the midst thereof.
Okay? And that's very mindful of 1 Peter 5:8, that your adversary, the devil, is a roaring lion, walks about seeking whom he may devour.
Yeah, yeah.
And we know that the devil is hired and promoted all of these false preachers today.
That's right. That's right, because we have the great apostasy is totally upon us, and there's not one denomination around except Christian Identity, which teaches the literal truth. All the rest of it is delusion. Verse 26, her priests have violated my law and have profaned my holy things. The law has been done away with, right? And they have put no difference between the holy and the profane. They invite homosexuals to perform religious rituals, don't they? Neither have they showed difference between the unclean and the clean.
Yeah, now, from Ezekiel chapter 34, we'll find out when we get there, we can see that Yahweh speaks of people here.
Mm-hmm.
He's not speaking of food.
Right.
Ezekiel 34:17 says, and as for you, O my flock, thus says Yahweh God, behold, I judge between cattle and cattle,
mm-hmm.
between the rams and the goats.
Uh-huh, right, right. And have hidden their eyes from my Sabbaths and am profaned among them. Of course, every denomination seems to practice its own Sabbath, but at least they're doing that much, even though it's not in the right spirit. Verse 27, her princes in the midst thereof are like wolves ravening the prey, wolves in sheep's clothing, to shed blood, to destroy souls, to get dishonest gain. Definitely, Hagee and all the people you've mentioned so far. Verse 28, and her prophets have daubed them with an untempered mortar, seeing vanity and divining lies to them, saying, rapture? Saying, thus says Yahweh Elohim, when the Lord has not spoken. We could probably, if we want to do a show on the slogans of modern Judeo-Christianity, such as Jesus loves everybody, the law has been done away with, and we could probably make a list at least a mile long.
I remember this calls to mind something I addressed in William Fink versus the Paul Bashers from John Spahn.
Yeah, okay.
Bishop John Spong.
Right.
He had, his wife was sick, and he received a homosexual epiphany while his wife was sick. And
okay.
came out of his wife's illness being one of the biggest proponents of the ordination of homosexuals and the acceptance of homosexuals.
Was his wife male or female?
Well, yeah, you know, he had two daughters. So
okay.
Evidently, he was walking down the right path when he started
for a while.
Out.
Okay.
And he hit a bump in the road and made a sharp left
yeah,
turn.
He hit his head on the steering wheel.
Right.
And he had an epiphany. Right.
Well, he had his wife was ill. His daughters were growing up. He had this homosexual epiphany,
yes.
And all of a sudden, he's promoting homosexuality, and he's the reason for all of the Church for all that division over homosexuals.
That's right.
John Spong started it all when he ordained the first openly homosexual pastor.
Right.
All right. And when he did that, and he started advocating that homosexuals be allowed to marry in the church. He used the verse to justify it, that it's not meet that a man should be alone.
Mm-hmm.
So if you reject women, well, just go marry another man. It's
right.
Okay. It's all right. And he did that and justified that as he's bashing Paul, because Paul is the only one in the New Testament that makes open,
yes.
explicit statements against homosexuality.
That's right.
I mean, there's no reason for that to be discussed in the Gospels.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, it's very plain that it just never falls into the context of the Gospels.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah. Paul is openly anti-homosexual.
Well,
no doubt
right,
about it.
Three times, and that's
yes.
why all the Jews and the homosexuals hate Paul.
That's right.
Well, Spong actually discards Paul's words and tries to justify homosexuality
mm-hmm.
with that one line from Genesis
right.
and a mishmash perversion of the words of Christ.
Yeah, well, I think we've stated a few times already, whole denominations are created on one mistranslated
on one
verse.
Exactly. and he took that verse, it's not meet that a man should be alone, and he ran with it.
Yeah, right.
Right into a wall.
Exactly. Okay, verse 29. The people of the land have used oppression and exercised robbery and have vexed the poor and needy. Yea, well, every single one of these televangelists is basically a sophisticated thief. By denigrating the actual scripture, then telling us, for example, that the Old Testament is obsolete, we don't need it, and we can't really understand the New Testament unless we read their books, right? The plain word is never good enough. We have to read their books and their explanations of it. And, of course, they go on television and make themselves rich, okay?
Well, I got a quote from Joel Osteen.
Okay.
It's God's will for you to live in prosperity instead of poverty.
Okay.
It's God's will for you to pay your bills and not be in debt.
Right.
It's God's will for you to live in health and not in sickness all the days of your life.
Well, all those things are true.
This is all true.
Yeah.
If we keep the law.
Right.
But Joel Osteen never mentions that part.
Right.
If
you don't, it's a Joel Osteen.
he does not state one word about sin or judgment.
Right.
Not one word about sin or judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Not one. And he all of these other things are promised to us if we keep his law.
That's right.
And there's still no guarantee we're not going to be tried.
That's right. Oh, we will be tried, no matter what. There's no doubt about that. So Jesus says only the overcomers will be saved. There's a lot to overcome yet. Okay. Yea, they have oppressed the stranger wrongfully. Did you have a chance to check out the Hebrew word for stranger here? Are we talking about strangers? Probably we're probably talking about Israelites here.
Well, which specific verse are you in?
Verse 29. They have oppressed the stranger wrongfully. We're probably talking about strangers.
Well, yeah, that's the ger. That's the 16th.
Ger, okay,
stranger.
Very good.
That's a guest.
Okay.
And let me give a little background. Yeah, you know, this word's very important in the ancient world.
Right.
And it's missed by everybody because they don't read the culture.
Right.
But the Greeks used xenos as the idea of a guest friend.
Okay.
Someone deserving, a stranger who's deserving of hospitality.
Right, yeah, because in the ancient world, there weren't all that many motels, right?
well, right, and the guest is not the allotrios or alien or the
Alotriogenos
or somebody of another race.
Mm-hmm.
They are not the Xenos stranger.
Uh-huh.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, the Xenos to the Greeks was holy. You could not, when a stranger was hurt or suffered some harm in your land,
mm-hmm.
it was a huge disgrace to you.
Okay.
And you expected the judgment of the gods to come down on your family.
Okay.
That's how the Greeks treated. So when somebody, a fellow from another nation, was passing through their land as a guest, as an admitted guest
uh-huh.
into that country, who deserved the expectation of
yeah.
hospitality, all right, that they considered those people sacred. And,
yeah.
and that is an
yeah.
Israelite tradition.
Right. Yeah, it used to be that way in the South, too.
well, right. But we see in the Old Testament, be ye kind to strangers, for you were once strangers in the land of Egypt.
Right.
That word is this word, G-E-R, ger.
Yeah.
It's a guest. It's someone who can expect hospitality in your nation.
Mm.
It is not an alien.
Right.
If we were sitting here and a Canadian walked by, he'd be a gay, right?
Right.
And if we were sitting here and a Mexican was coming up the block,
right.
he'd be an alien. There's
right.
a difference.
That's right. Very good. Verse 30, and I sought for a man among them that should make up the hedge and stand in the gap before me for the land, that I should not destroy it, but I have found none. You won't find any among the televangelists, that's for sure.
Well, here it is saying that at this time in Jerusalem, there was not one example of righteousness among the men of Jerusalem.
That's right. Certainly, and not among the priests either. Verse 31, therefore have I poured out my indignation upon them. I have consumed them with a fire of my wrath. Their own way have I recompensed upon their heads. Again, it's people who want to do it their way as opposed to Yahweh's way are going to get judged. That's
well, contrary to Joel Osteen,
yeah,
right? Paul says at Hebrews 10:30, for we know him that has said, vengeance belongs to me, I will recompense.
Right.
And again, Yahweh shall judge his people.
Right.
Paul taught over and over again that such a judgment was inevitable for sinners.
Mm-hmm.
Here it says, their own way I have recompensed upon their heads.
Mm-hmm.
And what that means to me is that the manner after you have laid aside the law,
right.
you will be judged.
Exactly. Yeah.
If you have not put the sinners out from among you, you're going to suffer the judgment of those sinners.
Right. Right. Very good. Okay. Chapter 23, verse 1. The word of Yahweh came again to me saying, son of man, there were two women, the daughters of one mother.
Now, this is Israel and Judah.
Okay.
And I have a long discussion about Judah and divorce at the end of this chapter.
Okay.
That I would really like to go through.
Sure, sure. Okay. And they committed whoredoms in Egypt, and they committed whoredoms in their youth. There were their breasts pressed, and there they bruised the teats of their virginity. And, of course, obviously, Yahweh does not punish these Israelites for marrying amongst themselves, okay? Obviously, there must have been a whoredom going on, you know, outside of wedlock, but we're talking about multiracial fornication.
Well, we're going to see that very clearly
yeah.
in subsequent verses and chapters.
Okay. Verse 4, and the names of them were Ahola, the elder, which sounds very much like aloha, you know, in the Hawaiian language. Ahola,
a hole.
Right? Yeah, right. Oh, the elder and Aholibah, her sister, and they were mine, and they bore sons and daughters. So they had to be Israel. Okay.
Well, this is Israel and Judah, and they were Yahweh's,
yes.
contrary to Turkey's like troublemaker.
That's right.
Who tried to claim that Judah was never Yahweh's. Right?
Right, right. And they bore sons and daughters. Thus were their names Samaria. Okay, that's the house of Israel. Samaria is Ahola, and Jerusalem, which is the house of Judah, is Aholibah. Ahola played the harlot when she was mine, and she doted on her lovers, on the Assyrians, her neighbors. Okay, we're talking about multicultural race mixing here. Verse 6.
Well, right. Now, even though the Assyrians were white and they were Semites, right?
Yeah.
Even though they were white.
Primarily.
Right, primarily. They became an empire, too. And when they became an empire, they folded in the remnant of the Hittites.
Right.
That they took on some of the other Adamic nations.
Yes.
And the Babylonians, and we know that there were Kenites in large numbers in Babylonia, and they folded all of them into their empire. And when you look at the reliefs on the walls of the Assyrian castles, you'll see from the pictures I've seen of them, you'll see hooked-nosed men in the courts of the Assyrians.
Right.
And you'll see straight-nosed men.
Right.
And most of the Assyrian, you know, kings and officers have straight noses.
Yes.
But the hooked-nosed type is there.
Yeah.
It's pretty obvious to me. I mean.
Yeah. Well, typically the way the Hittites slash Ashkenazi slash Jews operate is they always weasel their way into the courts of the kings. So
they've always doctors in the Middle Ages.
Right.
That's how they did it. They were doctors. They became physicians.
Mm-hmm.
Which there was no such thing as a Christian physician.
Right.
At that time. And there shouldn't be today, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and being in debt makes you ill.
right. And all of the kings were fooled. The Byzantine kings had Jewish physicians in their courts.
Right. Right. Very good. Okay. And the Assyrians, her neighbors, which were clothed with blue, captains and rulers, all of them desirable young men, horsemen riding upon horses. Thus she committed her whoredoms with them and with all them that were the chosen men of Assyria and with all on whom she doted. With all their idols she defiled herself. So it sounds like, typically I'm reminded of the movie Far From the Madding Crowd, which, I forget the lady's name, but the female protagonist of the movie fell in love with a guy in a uniform, right? So apparently, the Israelite women were, awestruck by some of these men in uniform and,
Well, definitely. And I have some, I'll skip ahead in my notes. But first, I got distracted a minute ago with Jewish physicians, and I missed my original point was that, the Israelites were allowed to intermarry with people of other Adamic races.
Exactly.
That's spelled out in the law.
Yeah.
However, there were strict guidelines for that. The non-Israelite Adamic family, say from Syria or Assyria
or
Media or the Persians or an Egyptian family or whatever, as long as
Hamites.
They were Adamites,
right?
Mm-hmm. They were allowed to move into the land, and if they kept the law and were straight for three generations, then they were allowed to intermarry.
Okay.
But not until. And that would make sure that the idolatry would be gone from that family.
Right.
And that they kept the law of Yahweh,
mm-hmm.
as Adamic people should.
Yes. Exactly.
But here, all of that is certainly laid aside.
Right, right.
Now, this description that's given, and we'll see this later on in verse 14, it specifically mentions men portrayed upon the wall, the images of the Chaldeans portrayed with vermilion.
Right.
And I'm going to skip ahead. I didn't have this noted for a while. That this seems to be talking about the very famous reliefs. Bas reliefs that we see impressed upon the walls of all the government buildings of the Assyrians.
Right.
And these were intricate portrayals of men.
Yes.
And men in the court, men in the military, men on the march, armies were portrayed, guards, officers were portrayed, kings on these reliefs.
Yes.
With winged bulls and other icons. And these reliefs were really in abundance throughout all of the large cities and governmental centers of Mesopotamia, and that's what this is talking about.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Roosevelt post offices.
Right. The Israelites became smitten with the monuments and the pomp and grandeur of the Assyrians.
That's why the Catholic Church copied all of that, right?
Right, absolutely.
Okay,
it's authority. It's symbols of authority.
Exactly. Verse 8. Neither left she her whoredoms brought from Egypt, for in her youth they lay with her, and they bruised the breasts of her virginity and poured their whoredom upon her. And, of course, there was a lot of pomp and magnificence in ancient Egypt as well. Verse 9, wherefore I have delivered her into the hands of her lovers, into the hand of the Assyrians upon whom she doted. These discovered her nakedness, which means there was interracial sex going on. They took her sons and her daughters and slew her with the sword, and she became famous among women as a whore, right?
Right.
For they had executed judgment upon her. Well, of course, typically the Israelite women, being pure whites, would have been the most beautiful, okay? And so they were famous, as they are today, as our women are the most famous today, verse 11. And when her sister Aholibah saw this, she was more corrupt in her inordinate love than she, and in her whoredoms more than her sister in her whoredoms. She doted upon the Assyrians, her neighbors, captains and rulers, clothed most gorgeously, horsemen riding upon horses, all of them desirable young men. Now, this can't be taken allegorically. This is literal, folks. 13. Then I saw that she was defiled, that they took both one away, and that she increased their whoredoms. For when she saw men portrayed upon the wall, the images of the Chaldeans portrayed with vermilion, girded with girdles upon their loins, exceeding in the dyed attire upon their heads, all of them princes to look to, after the manner of Babylonians of Chaldea, the land of their nativity. Now, of course, we have the same thing going on today. It's called advertising. Okay? How many of our women are being led astray by magazine images of black basketball players, right, as something to look up to or look toward, you know, or to chase after, right?
All the idols set up by the Jews.
Yes,
all
exactly.
Of Satan's idols.
Yeah.
When you look at a television, a movie, a glossy magazine, just think of all of Satan's idols, because
yes,
that's what you're looking at.
That's right, yes. Okay, verse 16. And as soon as she saw them with her eyes, she doted upon them and sent messengers to them into Chaldea.
Now today, women sit in the stands and throw their panties to basketball players.
Right, right. In the hockey, it's called a hat trick, but I haven't seen that in hockey. Verse 17. And the Babylonians came to her into the bed of love, and they defiled her with their whoredom, and she was polluted with them, and her mind was alienated from them, or actually because of them, probably is probably the best way of putting this here. So she discovered her whoredoms and discovered her nakedness. When my mind was alienated from her, like as my mind was alienated from her sister.
Now this, I have a long, okay. I'd like to get to a 4 or 5 short paragraphs here.
Okay.
This proves to me that Judah was treated no differently than Israel for her infidelity.
Right.
That there are a lot of so-called teachers that claim that Judah was never divorced by Yahweh.
Right.
And I believe that they take advantage of the language of the King James Version where it says that Israel was handed a bill of divorce in Jeremiah 3:8.
Right.
And they claim that such was never done for Judah. But here it says, my mind was alienated from her,
mm-hmm.
Aholibah, or Judah, like my mind was alienated from her sister,
right.
Aholah, or Israel.
Right.
Now Jeremiah 33:24 states thusly, considerest thou what this people has spoken, saying, the two families which Yahweh has chosen, has he even cast them off, meaning both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Thus they have despised my people, that they should no more be a nation before them.
Right.
And then in Zechariah 10:6 we read, and I will strengthen the house of Judah, and I will save the house of Joseph, and I will bring them again to one place, for I have mercy upon them,
right.
And they shall be as though I had not cast them off,
right.
For I am Yahweh their God and will hear them.
Yes.
And all those who claim that Judah was not divorced, just because it doesn't state explicitly a bill of divorcement,
yes.
In essence, they accuse Yahweh of breaking his own law, as given in Deuteronomy, that a man must put away an adulterous wife.
Mm-hmm.
And that's explained in Deuteronomy chapter 24. And even though the context is a little different there, it shows that a man cannot take back a wife who had been with another.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Leviticus 20:10 says, and the man that commits adultery with another man's wife, even he that commits adultery with his neighbor's wife, and the adulterer and the adulteress shall surely be put to death.
Right.
And a further examination of scripture might, yeah, you know, it's, all right, let me, Deuteronomy 24:1-4 shows that a man cannot take back a wife who had been with another.
Right.
And while the reason given is somewhat different, it demonstrates certainly that odious to Yahweh. It's an abomination to Yahweh
both
that a husband take back a woman that had committed whoredom. Right.
Yeah, so,
and under penalty, under the law, the penalty for adultery was death.
Right.
And if we claim that Yahweh did not divorce Judah, in spite of it saying many times that Judah was put away,
yes.
In essence, we're accusing Yahweh of the very same fault which we ourselves have found in Adam.
It would be inconsistent.
Yes.
Extremely
inconsistent.
If he judges Ahola for the same thing that Aholibah did, if he didn't judge them both the same way, he'd be inconsistent.
Well, the problem with the minds of many, even in identity, is that a further examination of Scripture will show that it's the remnant which is not really divorced.
Right.
Those who were allowed to return and build the second temple.
Yes.
And while they bore the name of Judah, there's no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because the Psalm says that Judah will provide the sanctuary, but Israel, the dominion.
Okay.
Okay. The sanctuary is the temple where Christ was slain.
Right.
That's the sanctuary.
Right.
Now, the even though they bore the name of Judah, the remnant really consisted of both Israel and Judah.
Sure.
There were people from Benjamin there. They were the apostles.
Right.
I mean, they're technically, even though they belong to that two-tribe nation, they're technically of the tribes of Israel and
sure.
not Judah.
Well, and, even in the New Testament, the Judahites of Judea referred to themselves as Israel.
Well, absolutely.
Constantly.
And my point is that the remnant was never really separated from Yahweh,
yeah.
but Israel and Judah were both treated alike.
Right.
They were both
yeah.
divorced.
Well, these verses really, they certainly prove that. There's no doubt about it. Okay,
well yes. And a lot of the, that word, a bill of divorcement, it is confusing because, we have an idea of divorce in our heads because of our society, where it's officiated and decreed by a judge and then it's
right.
made official. In the ancient world, a putting away of a
you
wife.
You have to pay lawyers to get it.
Well, right. A putting right. away of a wife is a divorce.
Uh-huh. Right.
That is the divorce.
Yeah, it was in those days it was done without legal consultation.
Beat it. Leave.
Yeah,
go
exactly.
away.
Right, right. So you had to have witnesses. You couldn't just do it,
Well, the witness was decreed in the law to protect the woman and to protect any man that may have taken her in.
Right.
That the husband putting away a wife is bound by the law to give her a bill
right.
showing that he put her away.
Yes.
Which is called a bill of divorcement.
Mm-hmm.
Now that was that wasn't to show that there was an official divorce.
Right.
Yeah. That was between the husband and the wife. To show that he put her away so that he attesting to that on that paper, she was protected going and being taken in by another man.
Mm-hmm.
If she doesn't have that piece of paper and that husband says, oh, my wife slept with him last night in his house.
Right.
Well, they could be stoned to death.
Exactly.
That piece of paper was to protect the woman and prevent
from
that.
Yes.
And to protect any man who was kind enough to take her in,
yes.
even if he didn't sleep with her.
Right. Yes. Okay. Very good. Verse 19, yet she multiplied her whoredoms in calling to remembrance the days of her youth, wherein she had played the harlot in the land of Egypt. For she doted upon their paramours, whose flesh is as the flesh of asses, okay, and whose issue is like the issue of horses. We're talking about beasts here, folks.
Well, and not only that, but, that shows that some of them are mixed, right?
That's
to
right.
me, it does, because we have asses and we have horses.
Mm-hmm. Talking about different breeds. Well, we could use the word humanity. Obviously, the forbidden races. Verse 21, thus you call to remembrance the lewdness of your youth in bruising your teats by the Egyptians for the breasts of your youth. Therefore, Aholibah, thus says Yahweh Elohim, behold, I will raise up your lovers against you, from whom your mind is alienated.
From whom his mind, Yahweh's
whom,
mind.
Yeah, it does, yeah, again, it doesn't make sense. And I will bring them against you on every side. Verse 23, the Babylonians and all the Chaldeans, Pekad and Shoah and Koah and all the Assyrians with them, all of them desirable young men, captains and rulers, great lords and renowned, all of them riding upon horses. So obviously, The major thrust seems to be that the Israelites were captivated by all this pomp and circumstance, authority, and, of course, ambition.
Well, right, but they also started making leagues with these people. They
right.
ceased from being that special,
yeah.
separate nation that they were supposed
right.
to
be. Right, we're not to have anything to do with these other nations.
Right, Adamic or not.
Yes, exactly.
They followed the ways of false gods and fallen angels,
yeah,
and we're not to have anything to do with them.
We're supposed to be the leaders.
And that's a lesson for us today,
yeah.
and not to have anything to do with the non-Christian,
yeah.
No matter how racist they claim to be or no
right.
matter how
right.
awakened or aware, if they won't accept Christianity, that they shouldn't be for us.
Right, right.
And the parallel on a national level that I see today is today, you know, we've made leagues with China, with
uh-huh.
Russia, and with all the world's heathens.
Yes.
And they, too, are devouring us
yes,
because
are.
We've made leagues with them.
Right.
And they
yes,
shall
right.
devour us in the same manner that this nation, our ancient Israelites, were devoured.
Yeah.
And if Yahweh does not keep his promise to our fathers and show his mercy on us, as outlined in the story of Ezekiel 38 and 39,
yeah.
we're in trouble. We're doomed.
Yeah. Well, even though the Chinese aren't devouring us in the same way that the Mexicans are that flood of immigrants, right?
Well, right. The Chinese is just devouring our debt, and therefore
yeah.
they have a lien on every piece of property
well,
we
and,
own.
And they're killing us with their imports. They're contaminated imports, right? Poisoned food, poisoned drywall. They're taking our jobs away from
well,
us.
Well, we
right?
should know not to buy anything from these people.
Right.
Why would you buy a dog from a snake?
right.
You'll get rabies. There's no doubt.
right. That's right. And all of these imports that we're taking, accepting from China, the vast majority of them are contaminated in one way or another. Okay. It's bad news. Okay. Verse 24. And they shall come against you with chariots, wagons, and wheels, and with assembly of people, which shall set against you buckler and shield and helmet round about. And I will set judgment before them, and they shall judge you according to their judgments. Okay, so it's very obvious that Yahweh uses the other nations to judge us when we sin. Okay, there's a lot of people in Christianity who don't want to accept this, that he doesn't judge us. You know, that it's just the natural consequence of our sin. No, this is the way he does it. Verse 25, and I will set my jealousy against you, and they shall deal furiously with you. They shall take away your nose and your ears, and your remnant shall fall by the sword.
Now, I'd like to comment real quick on that nose and ears thing, right?
Okay, right.
Because that was an actual punishment, which was used on traitors and various other people who fell into disgrace
right.
by the ancient Persians.
Uh-huh.
But when somebody disgraced their nation or was caught doing something horrible to the you know,
right.
to damage the troops or in a battle or anything of like, yet you know, that was thought to be traitorous, that they would lose their nose and their ears.
Okay.
And they'd cut them off, and they'd
right.
be forced to live life
for
without
life.
Nose and ears.
Yes, yes. So it's like the A for adultery, right? And your remnant shall fall by the sword, and they shall take your sons and your daughters, and your residue shall be devoured by the fire. They shall also strip you out of your clothes and take away your fair jewels. That's what's happening today, folks. Our economy is being destroyed. Thanks to the Rothschilds and all the, outsourcing, you know, flooding us with illegal immigrants. They're all taking our jobs, folks. Verse 27. Thus will I make your lewdness to cease from you, and your whoredom brought from the land of Egypt, so that you shall not lift up your eyes to them, nor remember Egypt. And, of course, we're being taught this lesson, that if we associate with these people and let them into our countries, Yahweh is going to punish us with them. Okay? Do you think the modern Judeo-Christians are learning anything? No, they're going to be brought down as low as possible until they finally wake up or die. Verse 28. For thus says Yahweh Elohim, behold, I will deliver you into the hand of them whom you hate, into the hand of them from whom your mind is alienated. We had nothing to do with Mexicans, what, 50 years ago?
Well, very little. I mean, there were some here. There were some deported, I think, in the Harding administration.
Okay.
But
yeah.
Well, we had nothing to do with them. No,
yeah.
that they were alien people. They never, we never dreamed that they would live next door to us in houses down the road and in the apartment next door. That's crazy.
Right, right. Yeah, and in the basement setting up a chicken coop, right? Verse 29, and they shall deal with you hatefully and shall take away all your labor and shall leave you naked and bare, and the nakedness of your whoredoms shall be discovered, both your lewdness and your whoredoms. And I'd say even the Tea Party people don't understand that all of, you know, our race mixing with these other people and bringing them into our nation and giving away the store to them is the real cause of all this. Okay?
Well, right, but the Tea Party people are still caught up in the media deception and in the general conservative liberal paradigm.
Right.
That's a false paradigm that's been carried by the media in this country for many years.
Right.
And the Tea Party people are still stuck in that.
That's right.
While they're probably mostly salt of the earth people,
right,
while they're probably Christians in practice, if not in profession,
yeah,
and good, hardworking people, they're still caught up in the mainstream.
Right.
They're still in their churches. They're still in the CNN and Fox
mm-hmm.
News. And they're still lost.
That's right. They're still lost. They don't understand.
I mean, I was right there in 1992, 1993, 1994.
Okay.
And I would have been a Tea Party person 20 years ago.
Right.
There's no doubt.
That's right.
I was a Republican voting conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes some time, but you realize something's wrong with that, too,
if
you examine it. If
yeah.
you step away from the Rush Limbaughs and
right.
the other clowns that
yes.
are the purveyors of that nonsense.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And what we've noticed lately with the Tea Party, the latest Tea Party rallies, is they're going to extremes. They're bending over backwards to have black speakers
at the Tea Party
rallies.
And you know, the Republicans in during the Bush administration, and it probably started in the Clinton Clinton years.
Right.
They started bending over backwards to find conservative black candidates
right.
for certain governor seats, Senate seats.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they did it in Maryland, Pennsylvania. They did it in Ohio, looking for states that so-called conservative blacks could win.
Yes.
And it hasn't gotten them anywhere. It's they're actually that these people in Jerusalem making their deals with the heathens. And they're going to get raped and pillaged for it.
Yes.
I mean, there's no doubt.
Yes.
Whenever we try to placate the non-Israelite people, we're sinners in the eyes of our God because we're told to be a separate people.
That's right.
Never make contracts with them. Never make leagues with them. And we violate that. The Republicans are selling themselves out for on the altar of political correctness.
Yes.
Which is another idol of the Jews.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Very good. Okay, verse 30. I will do these things to you because you have gone a-whoring after the heathen, and because you are polluted with their idols. You have walked in the way of your sister, therefore will I give her cup into your hand. Thus says Yahweh Elohim, you shall drink of your sister's cup deep and large. You shall be laughed to scorn and had in derision. And, of course, these modern-day Christians are all being laughed to scorn. They are.
Well, you know, every time I saw a white man placate and throw himself at the feet of the Negroes for the sake of political correctness, they ended up devouring them.
That's right.
Every time.
Mm-hmm.
When a sheep throws itself to the wolves are going to feast.
Right.
It's never going to be different.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the law of separation, you know, has been bleached out of the Bible, right? And it's like there's no place in the Bible that says all races are the same. Absolutely nowhere. There's not one statement in the Bible that's even close to saying that. Yet that's what all of these Judeo-Christian denominations today are teaching.
Well, the lesson here is that we're commanded by Yahweh to be a separate people.
That's right.
And when we violate that, the people we violate it with, they are used by Yahweh to punish us.
We become like them, and then they punish us. Right. Exactly.
Over and over again.
Right.
That's the lesson right here in this chapter.
Right. And that's the amazing thing about Christian missionaries who are always trying to convert the world to Christianity, right? But what's really happening is those other people are converting the missionaries to their religion, right? The voodoo.
Right.
whatever else they did, because they constantly make adjustments and compromises and changes to true Christianity in order to bring them in.
Absolutely. I mean, I must have been about 13. I first started hearing in Jersey about hootenannies. What the hell is a hootenanny?
Right.
And they were the song and dance
Jews
sessions
for
that
Jesus?
Came out of that they came out of black out of Negro churches.
Oh, really? Okay.
And the white
that.
Churches started holding them.
Oh, okay.
and it's basically it was basically wasps gone. Ebonics.
Right. Hoots for ninnies, right?
well, right. It's crazy. But
yes.
And that started in the 70s.
Yeah.
Okay. In the Northeast anyway. And the wasps just all adopted
right.
the Negro ways of church worship.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very good. Verse 33, you shall be filled with drunkenness and sorrow, with the cup of astonishment and desolation, with the cup of your sister Samaria. You shall even drink it and suck it out, and you shall break the shards thereof and pluck off your own breasts, for I have spoken it, says Yahweh. Therefore, thus says Yahweh, because you have forgotten me and cast me behind your back, therefore bear you also your lewdness and your whoredoms. Now, this verse, isn't it exactly saying that these so-called white Christians have tossed out the Old Testament?
Well, yes, and they've forgotten Yahweh
That's
in favor
right.
of this kinder, gentler Jesus.
Right.
And the kinder, gentler
not
Jesus
kinder
they
and gentler.
Teach is not Jesus Christ at all.
That's right.
Not one bit.
Esther is dipped in blood, and he comes to declare judgment.
Well, right. Yahshua Christ is a God of judgment.
That's right.
And that's very clear in the Revelation.
Mm-hmm.
They don't read the Revelation. Oh, that book's sealed. We can't understand that.
It is?
Well, the Revelation was never sealed.
That's right.
It's
the
Daniel
book of
chapter
Daniel,
12 that was sealed.
Right.
But, right? That book was sealed.
Mm-hmm.
But they like to confuse that in people's minds.
Sure.
And
yes.
I've actually heard them say, oh, that book's sealed. We can't understand that.
Right. Right.
The Revelation, I think, says seal not the words of the book.
That's right. It sure does. That's
and
right.
It also says that if any man changes them, he's in deep doo-doo.
Right. Exactly. And then, yeah, the Catholic Church even declared that, you know, major portions of the book of Revelation are unreliable, can't be believed, right? That's because they don't understand it, right?
Well, absolutely. But, you know, I've recently read an article produced by a Catholic bishop that said that the founding documents of Christianity are vague and it's, we're not sure that they're really authentic.
Well, the translations are vague and not authentic, right? They're translations.
Absolutely.
Verse 36, Yahweh said, moreover to me, son of man, will you judge Ahola and Aholibah? Yea, declare to them their abominations. And, of course, the modern churches said, well, we're not doing anything wrong. The law's been abolished. We can do as we please. You know, we can bring in, we can go to any war. We can support any war. We can support the Jews. And we can support the Antichrist. And none of it's wrong because the law has been done away with, right? Verse 37, that they have committed adultery and blood is in their hands. And with their idols have they committed adultery and have also caused their sons whom they bore to me to pass for them through the fire to devour them. Now, of course, this could be a direct reference to the fires of Molech, which were firstborn sons were tossed and sacrificed through the fire. But wasn't there an idiom you had mentioned in one of the previous shows?
Well, Clifton wrote on it, and I don't have it handy because it's something Clifton wrote on.
Yeah.
But it is on his website, and it's actually George Lanza. I disagree with him totally about his New Testament interpretations,
right?
I think he's really a clown when it comes to that.
Mm.
But he has a horse in the race because he's a native Aramaic speaker, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
But he does do a good job on a lot of the Hebrew idioms.
Okay.
Because he's a native Aramaic speaker, he understands that,
right?
Right. And casting your seed into the fire, he says that that's an idiom for race mixing.
Okay, very good.
And that's, you know, the message here is clear, and I have it noted in verse 45, but I'll state it here.
Okay.
Race mixing is murder.
Right. Exactly.
That's why their blood, the blood is on the hands of the parent.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Verse 38. 8. Moreover, this they have done to me. They have defiled my sanctuary in the same day and have profaned my Sabbaths. For when they had slain their children to their idols, when they came the same day to my sanctuary to profane it, and lo, thus have they done in the midst of my house. In other words, by race mixing, you deprive Yahweh of his children.
Well, today there's an exact parallel. I see it.
Uh-huh.
And that's that we worship Negro athletes on television,
right,
on the same day that we attend a so-called church.
Right.
And how is it different?
And you can be getting a sermon from T.D. Jakes, no less. Right.
Well, right.
Mm-hmm.
How is it different when we worship Negroes on television, these pro athletes running balls up and down the field, right?
Right.
And their idols, that they're objects of worship and adoration.
Right.
And then by doing that, we set an example for our children.
That's right.
And then when they grow up, they end up marrying the idols that we worship.
That's right.
Causing them to pass through the fire.
Right.
And how can we object?
Yes, we can't. We can't. Verse 40. And furthermore, that you have sent for men to come from far, to whom a messenger was sent, and lo, they came, for whom you did wash yourself, painted your eyes, and decked yourself with ornaments, in other words, more famous personalities from other nations, and sat upon a stately bed and a table prepared before it, whereupon you have set my incense and my oil. Now, this reminds me, as I'm reading this verse, of all the white women who have prostituted themselves for black athletes in various hotels around the nation, right?
Oh, right.
And then when
and
they get raped,
like the
they complain about it.
It's much like the Whore of Babylon in Revelation 17.
Right.
Yeah, when they get raped, they complain about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, what did you expect?
Well, when they get thrown, kicked to the curb out.
Yeah,
out,
you're right.
Cadillac,
and then they get tossed out. Exactly. Verse 42, and a voice of a multitude being at ease was with her, and with the men of the common sort were brought Sabaeans from the wilderness, which put bracelets on their hands and beautiful crowns upon their heads. Who are the Sabaeans?
Well, they started out being, there's two Sebas, and Sheba and
Sheba. Sheba, right. Yeah.
They're the same Hebrew word, right?
For
the most part, they're very similar. And there's two of them, one descended from Ham and one from Shem.
Okay.
And it's ambiguous which one is
sure.
We don't know which one is mentioned
right
here, that the Sabaeans came from.
Uh-huh.
There was a queen, you know, a queen of Sheba in the Bible, and there was a
right,
a kingdom that we know to be in southern Yemen that we believe is ancient Sheba.
Okay,
but
later called
Sabaeans. Whether
right
these are the Semites or the there's a Sheba, there's a Saba,
yeah,
there's the Saba from Shem, there's a Saba from Ham in Genesis 10, and it's confusing which one is which.
Well, we know that ultimately they became Arabs.
Well, yes, they did ultimately
yes
become
mm-hmm
Arab mixed race people,
right?
And here they are dressing themselves up to
right
attract our women, which is exactly what the Mexicans and the Negroes do today.
That's right. Okay, verse 43. Then said I to her that was old in adulteries, will they now commit whoredoms with her, and she with them? Yet when they went into her, this is the common expression for sexual intercourse. Yet they went into her, as they go into a woman that plays the harlot.
Well, that's pretty explicit.
That's
sexual
right
intercourse, right?
Exactly. So went they into Ahola and to Aholibah, the lewd women. Verse 45, and the righteous men, they shall judge them after the manner of adulteresses and after the manner of women that shed blood, because they are adulteresses and blood is in their hands. And as you said, race mixing is murder, murder of the white race. Verse 46, therefore thus says Yahweh Elohim, I will bring up a company upon them and will give them to be removed and spoiled. Okay, and of course this happened to both houses. Verse 47, and the company shall stone them with stones and dispatch them with their swords. They shall slay their sons and their daughters and burn up their houses with fire. This is judgment, folks, and we're going to get one more big judgment just like this. Verse 48, thus will I cause lewdness to cease out of the land, that all women may be taught not to do after your lewdness. Now, I have to comment here. All of these churches that are promoting race mixing today and the various wars on behalf of the Jewish state, they are going to be judged just like this. There's no doubt in my mind that this is the way they're going to be judged, because they're promoting all of this instead of staying separate and providing the city on the hill example of obeying the law.
Well, the next line is good, and the next line proves that this is about race mixing.
Okay, verse 49. And they shall recompense your lewdness upon you, and you shall bear the sins of your idols, and you shall know that I am Yahweh Elohim. Of course, a lot of these Judeo-Christians are so lost, they're so far removed from true Christianity, that they won't even know what's going on and why.
You shall bear the sins of your idols.
Mm-hmm.
Today, Christians are idolizing Negroes.
That's
Christians
right.
Christians are idolizing Mexicans,
right.
Asians,
yes.
Jews, and every other foul bird.
Right.
And wood and stone do not sin.
That's right.
This isn't talking about idols of wood and idols of stone.
Right.
The true idols were the people of the other nations to whom Israel and Judah
right.
were whoring themselves off to.
Well,
and
right.
it's the same way today.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, you don't sleep with a piece of wood. Right? Or a piece of stone.
How could a stone sin?
Right. Exactly. It can't. Chapter 24, verse 1. Again in the ninth year, in the tenth month, in the tenth day of the month, the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, you have any historical info on these years?
Well, this is probably 587 B.C. because it's the 10th month, right?
Okay.
And it's perhaps a little over a year before Jerusalem's final destruction.
Deportation, the defeat and deportation.
Yes.
Okay, very good. Verse 2, Son of man, write you the name of the day, even of this same day the king of Babylon set himself against Jerusalem this same day. Okay, so he started plotting, you know, against the city of Jerusalem on this day. Verse 3, and utter a parable to the rebellious house and say to them, thus says Yahweh Elohim, set on a pot and set it on, and also pour water into it. Gather the pieces thereof into it, even every good piece, the thigh and the shoulder. Fill it with the choice bones. Take the choice of the flock and burn also the bones under it. And make it boil well, and let them seethe in the bones of it therein. Why, thus says Yahweh, woe to the bloody city, to the pot whose scum is therein, and whose scum is not gone out of it. Bring it out piece by piece. Let no lot fall upon it. Okay, so he's talking about, you know, they're making up a witch's brew of race mixing. Verse 7, for her blood is in the midst of her. She set it upon the top of a rock. She poured it not upon the ground to cover it with dust, that it might cause fury to come up to take vengeance. I have set her blood upon the top of a rock that it should not be covered. Okay, what are these metaphors here?
Well, I think the metaphor is that she refused to hide her sin even.
Right.
She wouldn't even bury her sins in the backyard. They're bare right out of hell.
Right, okay. Well, there's the prophecy that in the latter days, you know, the people would be sinning and hiding it not. Okay, that's what certainly the homosexuals and the race mixers are doing exactly that today. Verse 9, therefore, thus says Yahweh Elohim, woe to the bloody city, I will even make the pile for fire great. And, of course, our own bones, those of us rebellious Israelites, our own bones will stoke this fire. Verse 10, heap on wood, kindle the fire, consume the flesh, and spice it well, and let the bones be burned. Then set it empty. This is all love and, you know, love and tenderness, isn't it? Verse 11.
Well, that's why we got to get rid of this mean God in the Old Testament.
Right, exactly.
Well, we need this nice baby Jesus with a nice virgin.
Yes.
And make everybody feel warm and fuzzy, right?
And cuddly, right. Yeah, cuddly Christianity. Yeah, and obviously sinners don't deserve to be punished. I didn't mean to do anything wrong, right?
Well, it's not even wrong anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, you could go and fornicate with six guys and a horse. It's all right.
That's right.
Well, we hate the act, but we'll watch it on TV tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's really amazing that the Christian churches just look the other way when all of this, you know, humongous evil is taking place right in their midst.
And that's why we deserve our punishment.
That's right.
Because we don't excoriate the sinner.
That's right.
To hell with the sin, hate the sinner.
Right.
That's what it should be. Put him out of the community.
That's right.
And then you'll have no more sin.
That's right. Yeah, so they're encouraging sin by, quote, being tolerant. Yes.
Well, when the Jews took over society, all the perverts came out of the closet, and now it's one gay pride parade from
right.
January 1st right through December 31st. It's
yeah.
crazy.
Christian tolerance has allowed the world to go straight to hell.
Well, that's the Christianity that the Jews bought in
that's
the
right.
Schofield and Bullinger Bibles
yes.
100 years ago.
Yeah, yeah. And the teaching that you shouldn't judge lest they be offended.
Well, right. And those passages are taken out of context, and that's because that word judge, it means also to condemn.
Mm-hmm.
And we're told because we're all sinners, we have no right to condemn
right.
our brethren according to the law.
Yeah. And,
but we are to judge and put the sinners away.
We are to judge as hypocrites.
Right. Well, right. We're not to do that either. And,
right.
and that's what the Pharisees were surely doing.
Surely.
But we have a clear message to put the sinner out from our
mm-hmm.
presence.
And that's
all
Paul.
We have to do.
That's right.
And that's Paul. We
yes.
don't stone them. We don't have to harm them.
Right.
But we have to get rid of them.
Right.
Hey,
yeah.
beat it. Get out of my face with your sin.
Right.
You're not going to corrupt
yeah.
my children and my children's children
right.
with these naughty things you're
yeah.
doing. It's not going to happen.
And those people will not prosper if we do that.
Well,
we
we're told
that
Yahweh will judge them
that's right.
when we put them away.
That's right.
If we don't put them away, he's going to judge us.
Well, and they're going to suck off of us. They're going to parasitize off of us, and that's what they do. Verse 11. Then set it empty upon the coals thereof, that the brass of it may be hot and may burn, and that the filthiness of it may be molten in it, that the scum of it may be consumed. She has wearied herself with lies, and her great scum went not forth out of her. Her scum shall be in the fire. And, of course, these Judeo-Christians, they don't think that they're doing anything wrong. You know, they actually think they're good in tolerating all this evil. Verse 13, in your filthiness is lewdness, because I have purged you, and you were not purged. You shall not be purged from your filthiness anymore till I have caused my fury to rest upon you. And this could be a reference to the end times. There's going to be one more great purging, folks, one great fire. Verse 14, I, Yahweh, have spoken it. It shall come to pass, and I will do it. I will not go back, neither will I spare, neither will I repent. According to your ways and according to your doings shall they judge you, says Yahweh. He's using these other races to judge us.
Well, our enemies have always been the rod of Yahweh's anger against us.
Right.
And that's explained among the consequences of disobedience listed in Deuteronomy 28 and Leviticus 26.
Right.
I have a quote here from Deuteronomy 28, 32 and 33.
Mm-hmm.
Thy sons and thy daughters shall be given unto another people,
mm-hmm.
and thine eyes shall look and fail with longing for them all the day long.
Right.
And there shall be no might in thy hand. In other words, our daughters and sons are going to be race mixing, and due to
right.
our sin, and we're not going to be able to do a thing about it.
That's right.
The truth of thy land, the fruit of thy land,
mm-hmm.
and all thy labors shall a nation
right.
which thou knowest not, China,
mm-hmm.
eat up, Mexico.
Right.
And thou shalt be only oppressed and crushed always.
Yes. Yes.
And that's exactly what's going on. That's exactly what's happening to us this very moment.
That's right. That's absolutely right, because we're giving away the store and they're taking it. Verse 15. Also the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Son of man, behold, I take away from you the desire of your eyes with a stroke. Neither shall you mourn nor weep, neither shall your tears run down. Forbear to cry, or do not cry, make no mourning for the dead. Bind the tire of your head, or the turban of your head upon you, and put on your shoes upon your feet, and cover not your lips, and eat not the bread of men. So I spoke to the people in the morning, and at evening my wife died. And I did in the morning as I was commanded. Now, we're taking this literally here.
Well, yes, we are.
Okay.
Here, Ezekiel's own wife was used as an example of the judgment
okay.
that should have come upon all Jerusalem.
Right.
Yet Yahweh spared the people of Israel and Judah as he had promised in other prophecies. But the prophet's own wife is used as an example here.
Okay.
If we see in verse 15.
Okay.
Okay. I shall take from thee the desire of thine eye.
Oh, okay.
With a stroke.
Yes.
Now, if we see in verse 21, which you have not read yet.
Yes.
The desire of your eyes and that which your soul pitieth.
Uh-huh.
And your sons and your daughters, whom ye have left, shall fall by the sword.
Yes, yes. So it's very clear when we compare these prophecies of Ezekiel, Jeremiah, and Isaiah that you know, our people will go astray through race mixing, that when we read the New Testament, the brethren that are being spoken of can only be Israelites and, of course, Adamites. Okay, it can't be of any other race because Yahweh uses these other races to punish us. That's clearly
absolutely
what's being said here. You know, so when we try to see them as our brethren and pollute the sanctuary with them, he will use them to punish us. And it's, you know, you and I and the rest of people in identity can see it, but the Judeo-Christians simply cannot see it. They don't know what's happening. And the vast majority of them don't even admit that there's anything wrong. They think this is paradise. Okay, verse 19. And the people said to me, will you not tell us what these things are to us, that you do so? Then I answered them, the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, speak to the house of Israel. Thus says Yahweh, behold, I will profane my sanctuary, the excellence of your strength, the desire of your eyes, and that which your soul pities, and your sons and your daughters whom you have left shall fall by the sword. And this is the part of the tragedy that these weak Judeo-Christians, they're producing gentle white offspring who are being fed to the wolves. Literally fed to the wolves in terms of being murdered and raped and you know, whatever's going on in the streets today, they're becoming drug addicts, et cetera, et cetera. Because there's no morality in the house, even though they're Christians.
And it's that gentle white offspring is really the statement to make too.
Mm-hmm.
That you can't even play as a kid in a schoolyard anymore.
That's right.
You know, when I was a kid, we grew up beating the hell out of each other in schoolyards.
Right. Yeah. While the girls watched. Yeah.
Well, right. And today boys aren't allowed to play in schoolyards.
Right.
And when they try, they're loaded up with drugs. Right.
Right.
They're given Ritalin and all kinds of stuff.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
okay.
You're a problem child if you try to act like a boy today. It's incredible what we're doing to our children. And,
yes.
And it's these Jewish doctors and Jewish psychiatrists who are doing it to us.
Right, right. And children have become, babes have become prey thanks to Judeo-Christianity with its Jewish influence. Absolutely. Okay. Verse 22, and you shall do as I have done. You shall not cover your lips nor eat the bread. We will learn to straighten ourselves. Verse 23, and your turbans shall be upon your heads and your shoes upon your feet. You shall not mourn or weep, but you shall pine away for your iniquities, those of us who do learn from our mistakes, and mourn one toward another.
Thus, I like the original King James reading of that better. Your tires shall be upon your head.
Right, exactly. Thus Ezekiel is to you a sign, according to all that he has done shall you do. And when this comes, you shall know that I am Yahweh. Also, you son of man, shall it not be in the day when I take from them their strength, the joy of their glory, the desire of their eyes, and that whereupon they set their minds, their sons and their daughters? And, of course, we could talk about kidnapping, too. Verse 26.
Well, we will next week when we talk about the Tyrians.
Yeah, okay. Verse 26, that he escapes in that day shall come to you to cause you to hear it with your ears. In that day shall your mouth be open to him which is escaped, and you shall speak and be no more dumb, and you shall be assigned to them, and they shall know that I am Yahweh. What is these last couple of verses here talking about?
Well, I'm sorry, I just lost my page.
Okay.
I hit the forward button on my mouse, and it just stopped.
Okay, well, let me read verse 26.
It says that escapes in that day shall come unto thee and cause thee to hear it with thine ears. And that's a question. In that day thy mouth shall be opened to him which is escaped, and thou shalt speak and be no more dumb, and they shall know that I am. I think that's looking forward to the gospel. Those that escape.
Okay.
That are able to return from Babylonia,
mm-hmm.
to come back and not die in the captivity and not remain subject to the Babylonians.
Yeah.
Those that escape, I see, as those who return to Judea later on.
Okay.
And that's when, you know, those people will be used so that the rest of Israel knows that,
yeah.
that Yahweh is who he says he is.
Yeah, and in Jeremiah, this is stated very, very plainly, that he's put the house of Judah away for their own good, and he has promised through Jeremiah that they would later return.
Right.
Very, very specifically. Okay. Very good. Okay. I have to go to bed early tonight because I have a very early appointment. And so let's conclude the show right here, and we'll pick it up in Chapter 25 next week, next Friday. And, I may not be able to make next Friday. I have to play this by ear. I will let you know. Okay. And so tomorrow night you are doing, again, you want to announce the show that you have planned for tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow my theme's going to be Errors Inspired by Who?
Okay.
And, you know, it's basically the gist is going to be that, I'm going to walk through a lot of the plain errors in translation in the letters of Paul.
Yes.
And,
okay.
And the gist is going to be that if there's one error in the King James Bible,
okay.
that there's a lot of people that claim the King James Bible is the inspired word of God.
Right.
If there's one error in it, is it the inspired word of God?
Mm-hmm.
What if there's two errors in it?
Yes.
What if there's 100 errors in it?
What if there's 30,000?
Well, right. Yeah, you know, at what point do we agree that we have to examine the original text
right.
and the veracity of the original
text? Well, that's what's stated in the Westminster Confession. If there's ever a doubt about the meaning of a verse or a passage, or if there's a contradiction between passages, then the Westminster Confession states we should go back to the original Hebrew and the original Greek and see what's wrong. Okay?
Well, there's a I read a letter on my Euro forum yesterday, my European Fellowship forum,
uh-huh.
right, from a Colin Farker. And I'm not really mispronouncing his name, but I'd like to. But, well, Colin Farker has called you and I basically satanic devils.
Okay.
For teaching the things that we teach.
Right.
And disinviting all of the people with sympathies towards Two Seed Line from the Orange Street Church.
Oh.
I have that letter, and I have it published on the on the Christogenia Euro Forum podcast archive.
Okay.
And I will publish it on the New Ensign site when I get the time.
Uh-huh. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so, it's amazing, you know, what we're doing. We're just checking the original Hebrew and Greek and see how they compare to these translations, right?
Well, you know, just like when the Reformers read the Bible for the first time and they had to break from the Catholic Church, right?
Right.
Well, I had to take it a step further and read the Greek
yes.
and break from the King James.
That's
I mean,
right.
it can't be right. And,
right.
and my translation, it may not be perfect, and believe me, it's far from perfect. That there is no perfection unless it comes from Yahweh himself.
Mm-hmm.
A man can only do as good as it's given to him to do.
We can
and,
try.
And I've yeah. done as good as I can, and I probably made some mistakes, but I know I'm a hell of a lot closer than the King James is.
Yeah.
And I'll dispute that with anybody.
Right, right. Very good, very good. All right, so that sounds like a really great show for tomorrow. And then Sunday, Greg Howard and I will do part two of the Testament of the 12 Patriarchs. We will be doing the Testament of Simeon on Sunday, okay? So, thanks for joining me again, Bill, and all of you in the chat room. Thanks for joining us. It's our pleasure to bring you these shows and and try to analyze the Hebrew and Greek scriptures as they should be. You know, because there's no justification for translating words incorrectly. There is simply no justification for that. Anybody who does it is either a fool or a liar. That's just simply it, folks. He's either a fool or a liar if he tolerates false translations. Okay?
Well, absolutely.
Yes.
We can't translate verbs as nouns. We might disagree on the meaning of a noun or the nuance of a verb,
mm-hmm.
but a verb is a verb, and it has to fall within a certain range of meaning.
Right.
And
it has
as
to be
it's
translated
used,
as a verb.
Well, right. As it's used in secular
right.
Greek literature.
Yeah.
And the same thing with a noun being a noun. it has to fall into a certain range of meaning.
Right.
But you can't translate verbs as nouns. Mm-hmm. You can't swap the objects and subjects of clauses.
Right.
You can't translate nouns as verbs. It just doesn't work.
Yeah.
And whenever you do that, well, you're lying.
Yeah, right.
There's no excuse for it.
It's not just bad translation. It's lying. There's no doubt about it. Yes, very good. All right, Bill, thank you very much. And everybody in the chat room, thanks for joining us this evening. Praise Yahweh.
And real quick, I have one more short announcement.
Okay.
I posted the Testament of the Patriarchs today under Bible Studies on the New Ensign site under 12 Testaments of the 12 Patriarchs.
Okay.
Just in case anybody wanted to follow along with that on and didn't have the book or a website with it, I posted it.
Right. Very good. Thank you very much. Okay. All right. Again, thank you all. Praise Yahweh. And folks, have a good weekend. Yahweh bless everybody.